Let's go ahead and get back into the big book of beginnings, the book of Genesis. Turn to chapter number 11, verse 26 is where we're going to begin. This chapter was all about the genealogy of Shem, which connects us from the time of the flood to the time of Abraham, which is the next big section of the book of Genesis that we're going to be interested in. And he's actually a very important player for the rest of Bible history. So we have some chronological matters that can be dealt with here first. And if you check out my chronological companion to the Bible, you will see some of the charts that I've set aside at the beginning of the companion where I put the dating that I think goes with some of these names, their births and their deaths. And in this particular case, this is what we hear. Verse 26, when Terah had lived 70 years, he fathered Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Now, that's not a case of triplets. These three men are going to be born starting now until all of them are in the scene, and they are the significant names in the story that follows. So Haran, we know, is the one that is born when Terah was 70 years old. Abram, we will find out later, is going to be born about 60 years after Haran. And that date that I have assigned in my chronology, according to the Septuagint, which you know by now that I prefer the Greek Old Testament translation, rather than the numbers that are found in the Masoretic text, which comes from the Middle Ages. So my date for the birth of Abram is 2176 BC. And that anchors a whole bunch of other key dates in the Old Testament, which then in turn anchors things in the New Testament. And again, you can find those in charts at the beginning of the Chronological Companion, which is available on the website, intotheword2020.com. So verse 27 goes back and repeats the names again, and this time I want to talk about the meaning of their names, because I think it might play into some things that come up later. Verse 27, now these are the generations of Terah. Now you probably recognize that by now. That's the Toledot word. That is the beginning or the generations of the Terah family line. And this is the section of the book of Genesis that's found in. So Terah fathered Abram. Now, Abram's name in Hebrew simply means exalted father or high father. And I happen to think that he was named in honor of his grandfather, Nahor, who, according to the Septuagint chronology, had died the year before Abram's birth. And so that makes good sense to me that his dad was paying tribute to his own dad with the birth and naming of Abram. Nahor is the next name, and Nahor's name has something to do apparently with snorting or snoring, but I don't think that is significant here, because it's more than likely he was also named in recognition of his grandfather who bore that same name. So that tells me apparently that Terah must have felt very well attached to his father. And when his father passed on, he wanted to include that in the naming of his sons. And then the last son that's named here is, of course, the son that was born before the other two. His name is Haran. And his name has something to do with a mountain. And there is a 3,100-foot mountain just a few miles northwest of where I think the city of Ur was located in the story that's about to happen. So he might have been named because of some special place that was raised up and above his birth site. And then This is where we're told that Haran fathered Lot. And so this is the nephew of Abram that comes into several stories later. So he's the son of Haran, the oldest of these three sons of Terah. Verse number 28 tells us that Haran died in the presence of his father Terah, in the land of his kindred, in Ur of the Chaldeans. Now, this is where I deviate from almost all of the commentaries nowadays, although I find myself in good standing with ancient commenters on the location of Ur. Most of these commentators try to put Ur in the lower part of Mesopotamia, down toward the bottom of the Euphrates-Tigris watershed as it dumps into the Arabian or the Persian Gulf. That was a very prominent culture in the time right after Abram is born. And so they try to place Abram in a significant site of that time period, Ur of Lower Mesopotamia. But this has a modifier to it. It says it is Ur of the Chaldeans. And often when you see a modifier like that, it means there's more than one of this, and I need to distinguish between the two. When we check the first century historian Josephus on this topic, he quotes Nicholas of Damascus, who was writing sometime in the first century BC into the very early first century AD. And he identified Chaldea as, quote, the land above Babylon, called the land of the Chaldeans, end quote. And that's from Antiquities, Book 1, and I think it's Chapter 7, Section 2. Now, that indicates to me that Chaldea was located upriver from the city of Babylon, and that Jewish people knew that. It just so happens that if you go upriver from Babylon, you come to a tributary that dumps into the river Euphrates that is at the center of this wonderful valley that has its headwaters up in the mountains of what is probably Chaldea. And there is a city there. It's called San Urfla now, I think is the name. But in the past, it was named as Urfa, and the people who live in that city have a long-standing tradition that Abram started his life there. And it's about 450 miles northwest of where the city of Babylon existed. So it's upriver in a region that is well-watered, lots of agriculture, and which also is ringed by mountains. We've also got a very ancient site, Göbekli Tepe, that has been unearthed there, that was an ancient site of pagan worship of other gods and goddesses. Now, I'll just let you know, I don't believe that Göbekli Tepe is as old as some of the claims that are made for it. I think that there's some over-aging in the mechanisms that they use because of the flood. And so I believe Göbekli Tepe might have been old in the time of Abram, but that tells me that this was a site of great paganism, and we know that Abraham came out of paganism. Now, verse 29 brings some other names into the story. Abram and Nahor took wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and Sarai in Hebrew means my princess. And she's about 9 years younger than Abram. They share the same dad, but not the same mom. And that will come up in a story later. Not a problem at this time in history, because as I've mentioned before, the genetic pool, very deep still and very wide. It's not until the time of Moses and after that incest, the marriage and reproduction in very close family ties is a bad idea and therefore forbidden. So at this time, Abram marries his own half-sister, and the name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and Iscah. And that seems to indicate, oh, by the way, her name means queen. So isn't that interesting? You got a princess and a queen. If this is the same Haran that is the brother of Abram and Nahor, that means that Nahor married his niece. And it wouldn't be impossible, because it seems that Abram and Nahor were the younger brothers of Haran, and so Haran would have already been raising his own family, and it's even possible, even likely, that some of the oldest children of Nahor, or excuse me, the oldest children of Haran would be roughly the same age as Sarai or Abram or Nahor himself. There is also the possibility, you know, that Haran is the name of more than one person in the region. So just keep that in mind, too. Now, Sarai was barren. She had no child. Now, the only way that that can be known is that Abram and Sarai were married for several years, maybe a couple of decades, and they start realizing, we have no children coming on. That's not normal. There's an issue here. And so that will play into our story as we proceed as well. Now listen to this part of the story next. Terah took Abram his son and Lot the son of Haran his grandson and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth together from Ur of the Chaldeans to go into the land of Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. Now, this is where we have to kind of weave together some information elsewhere in the story and match up some chronological information. And this is what I've come up with. We know that Abram testifies later that God appeared to him while he was still in Ur of the Chaldeans and called him to move to a land that he would show him. Here we have the additional information that Terah is the one that said, hey, let's all move south to Canaan. And so I get the impression that Abram must have shared his vision, his dream, his communication from God with his father and said, I need to move south. I need to go south toward Canaan because that's the direction God is indicating I should go. And Terah's response was, if you're going to go that way, I want the whole family to go that way. And there might even be some indication elsewhere that Terah embraced the one and true living God at the same time that Abram did. Because later, God will be referred to in, I think it's two passages, certainly one, as the God of Terah. And so that seems to indicate he'd embraced him. So we're going to add one more element here. We do this from time to time. We're going to bring in a tradition. And the tradition is that Abram along with his father, Terah, were involved in idolatry. And we know that's a fact. There's no doubt about that. They served other gods and goddesses. And Abram began to think that this idolatry stuff doesn't make any sense. The tradition even has the idea that they were themselves making idols. And Abram was going through this whole rationale of, wait a second, we're actually physically making these things. We make them out of stone. We make them out of wood. We sometimes plate the wood with precious metals. And after we do all that work to shape them and form them and set them up somewhere, we then start bowing down to them and saying, you are a god, you created us? What's that about? That doesn't make any sense. And that it was in that moment of doubt and rejection of idolatry that God reached out to Abraham for the first time and said, Abram, I am the God who created all things. I am not formed by human hands. I formed everything, including the humans. And I want you to follow me. So go south until I tell you to stop. And so when you weave all those things together, it does seem that Abram shared the information, Terah embraced it. It would appear Nahor, Abram's brother, embraced this worship of the one true God and traveled with them as far as Haran. And then when Abram ends up going farther south, Nahor stays behind. So the first leg of the journey, with the whole family in tow, gets about 25, 30 miles south, and something happens. And they get hung up and stay at Haran for an indeterminate period of time. We know the termination point because that comes up in verse 32. It says the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. And we make the chronological connection then that it was on that moment in that year that Abram continued south into the promised land at the time of his father's death. And I place that at 2101 BC. Now, the next chapter is the summarizing chapter. We've only been looking at the chronological information here, the genealogical information. Now we actually get into the story and a summary of how Abram ends up being called by the one true living God to head for the promised land. And this is what we read. Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. Now, he who is said to Abram. Now, he didn't know him by that divine name. He knew him only as the Most High God, meaning the God that is better than any other gods, the Creator God, the Mighty God, or the God that called me. One of the phrases for God that comes up a lot in the book of Genesis is El, which means God, Shaddai, which means a chest muscle, or in this case, my chest, my bosom, so the God of my bosom, my personal God. So he who is said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you, and I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you, I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth will be blessed. Now, that's very important wording. This seems, first of all, to be a repeat of an earlier call in Ur, that he needed to leave his family members and go south. Don't be sticking around with him anymore. Go south. He went south a little ways to begin with, but something happened at Haran, where they stayed there for a while. It might be, as is suggested in some commentaries, that Terah got sick, and Abram felt the responsibility as one of the two sons to take care of him until he passed away. And once he passed away, Abram continued the journey. There is also the possibility, I think, that Terah might have been a little bit nervous when he got news of some military operations down in Canaan, which is the direction they were going. And we know this from a later story that several kings from over in the southeastern part of Mesopotamia made a military run down into Canaan and took over some places and started extracting tribute money from them, tribute payments. And so that all seems to have happened right around this same time that we're looking at right here. So maybe Terah said, wait a second, let's pause in this journey until that all gets settled. But then he gets sick and dies before he declares that they should move on. So now it's Abram, who is the older of the two surviving sons of Terah, and that's why he takes on the responsibility for his nephew Lot, and Nahor. Nahor makes the choice to stay where he's at, in Haran, and we will come back in a later story and find him exactly there. Now, the wording of the blessing is this. Abram is told that he needs to go to this undisclosed location, which we call the Promised Land, and there he's going to be made into a great nation, a great people group, that he's going to have the blessing of God upon him and upon this people group, that his name is going to become very significant, and it most certainly has, hasn't it? And that he is going to be the source of blessing, not just simply for his own family, but for the people he runs into. The people who bless him, that is, respond positively to him, it's going to boomerang back on them. They're going to be blessed. And those who treat him badly, that's going to boomerang back on them, and they're going to have a curse from God put upon them. But when we get to the end of verse number 3, we come across the first of the messianic promises to Abram. And that is this, in you, later the phrase will be used, in your seed, singular. In you, all the families, or the nations will be the wording in another repeat of this, all the people groups, all the ethnic groups, in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Now, Galatians chapter 3, Paul uses the later equivalent of this line and says, that seed of Abraham in which all the peoples of the earth, all the nations of the earth are going to be blessed is Jesus, the singular Son of God, the incarnate Christ, who gave himself up for our sins so that we might become the righteousness of God in him. He's the source of the blessing. And since he descends by blood from Abram, Abram is the beginning of that blessing cycle. So I count this as the first of the Abrahamic messianic blessing passages. Now, what does Abram do? Well, the book of Hebrews tells us he obeyed God. He believed God, he trusted in God, and he did what God told him to do. So Genesis chapter 12, verse 4, so Abram went as he who is had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. So that's one of the key chronological indicators as how we know he came into the land of Canaan when he was 75. And I put that date in 2101 BC. He's not alone. He has his nephew Lot with him. He also has his wife, his half-sister, Sarai. Verse 5, Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people that they had acquired in Haran, and they set out to go to the land of Canaan, or Canaan. And when they came to the land of Canaan, Abram passed through the land to a place at Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. And at that time, the Canaanites were in the land. So now we've set up for tomorrow's story, which is that you've got a brand new person that arrives near Shechem. Shechem means shoulders. It's probably a reference to the two hills, the two mountains that shoulder over the community there. But a very wealthy Bedouin arrives there from Mesopotamia. He has himself, his immediate family, and all his retainers. And he has got a big bunch, over 300, I believe, from a later count. He is a big businessman arriving on the scene. And then he's going to start interacting with the people already living there and establish himself as somebody significant in their lives as well.